Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 146, featuring John Sangiovanni from Visual Vocals. I have to say, this is actually a really, really fascinating podcast. You may be wondering who this person is or what they do. Well, let me tell you this. I actually got in touch with him through a friend of mine. His name is Bob Shea. I went to architecture school with Bob. And John worked, started this company called Visual Vocals, and they were backed by NBBJ, which is a architecture company. And we started talking through email for about a year, and then we finally got together, and he got to show me some of the stuff he's doing and explain it. And what's the most interesting thing about it is that he is solving the problem that people don't realize they have with VR and presentations, which is not VR itself, but communication. The way that you communicate and have a conversation in VR, it doesn't have to be super complicated. And what he's done is create an unbelievably useful system that is very, very simple to use. Amazing, amazing stuff. And he's actually a fascinating guy. John has basically, I call him like a serial entrepreneur. He has created so many different things. Really, really fascinating person. I had a great time with him. We exchanged some amazing stories. And when I introduced him to Lon was just saying, I've got to have a conversation with him too. And so he hopped in on the podcast as well. So Lon's on there, I'm on there. And it was a really, really great conversation. I had an amazing time. And I highly recommend the podcast. I highly recommend you guys check out Visual Vocals. So go to the podcast page and check out the links. I'm sure we'll have some links on there. You guys can check out some of the demos that they've done and how they actually solve this problem. Really, really fascinating stuff. And with that being said, actually, I should remind you guys that we did actually move all of the podcasts to a new page. So go to chaosgroup.com/CG-garage, and that's where all of the podcast stuff is right now. So definitely good to go check it out. We've reformatted it. We've done a bunch of stuff. So it's really a lot of fun. All right. With that being said, hopefully you guys will enjoy this amazing podcast with John Sangiovanni from Visual Vocals. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage where the Chaos Group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
You know what we're gonna start talking about, John? We're gonna start talking about the fact that you worked at Disney, but what was your first job at Disney?
I was on the opening cast of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle stage show.
Fantastic. Leonardo. You were Leonardo?
Yeah, cowbunga.
Leonardo was my favorite.
No kidding. Yeah. Leonardo's, he's a leader.
Come on. By far.
Oh, you guys. That it's funny. It's like every time I meet someone, I always find that there's some like secret amazing thing about this person.
Crazy
like,
wild card.
Yeah, some crazy wild card. Like Justin, who was like funded his visual effects education by breakdancing.
Sweet.
I love that.
Well, the first 5 minutes of my TEDx talk are the crazy story. Is this crazy story about how I had no business getting a job as a professional martial arts performer. And yet, like, as a classic example of, like, I was so emotionally invested, I'm like, I'm just going to fake it to make it. Right. And by some act of God, I got picked as the leader. Like, it's one of those classic things, you know? It's like...
That's awesome.
All right. So, besides martial art entertainer, what is your background before that? You did a bunch of other things in technology. You've been in... a technologist for a long time, right? So,
yeah.
So where does that come from? Give people a little backstory on that one.
Well, I've always been sort of drawn to those disciplines that blend the artist and geek together in an interesting way. And like, and also those regions and those people and those, I mean, sort of that's an interesting vein of, if you think about everything from, I did early work in the app economy around the explosion of iPhone and my first company, Zumobi, built some of the biggest news apps in the App Store, NBC News, Today Show, stuff like that. So that intersection of like media and technology, you know, and but really have always been, you know, like grew up on Lego, like a, you know, sort of very creative construct, but
hallelujah
with a, yeah, yeah. You know, yeah. Like all things that take a creative medium but express it in some kind of a structured form, that's always been my jam in different parallel universes. So my career path, you know, after Disney, I joined two guys with a startup, grew that, sold that. And then that's when I came to Microsoft Research in 99, in the early days when sort of mobile as a platform is really coming together.
Okay.
And got really excited about that vector. So I did, for 7 years, kind of traveling worldwide and doing research funding and some of my own research around touch-based interfaces for mobile devices. And then, interestingly, spun my patent portfolio out of Microsoft in 2006. With their blessing. It's kind of a rare transaction. Mm-hmm. And then that was that other company, which ultimately became kind of a leader in the app economy.
Right.
And then just for the last 2 years, been digging in on this sort of immersive communication, you know, sort of the way we slice that.
Right, which is kind of an interesting thing. So your company is called Visual Vocal,
yes.
Right? And Lon and I, who's joining me on this podcast, we have been thinking about VR for a long time, but not necessarily just about like cool experiences, just like the pragmatic parts of it, right?
It's got to work.
Right. Yeah,
it's got to be a, you know, something that's going to help you do something day to day, which the demo you just showed us was awesome. It's exactly that.
Cool.
It's,
awesome.
It's solving a problem that everybody has in it, which is, How does this function? How do I actually get the conversation beyond the tech?
Yes.
Right? How do I get there's this tech layer that everybody's scared of and you try to figure it out, but you got to get beyond that and then have real conversations like, what am I looking at? How do I fix this? How do I communicate with others? And you guys are doing it.
Awesome. Right.
Yeah, because we do have a ton of customers who create pre-rendered content, right? Because it's easy. It's like the easiest thing to get. Like, if you want to get VR and V-Ray, for example, it's like...
It's a gateway. Yeah.
Done, right? Yeah. You just do a six-dot, you know, cube map or panorama or whatever, and you're done. But then the question is, now that I've got that, okay, I can put it into one view and I can see it one at a time, right? So that's the thing you were telling us about. Like, the experience got you this far, but then when you're in a conference room...
Yes.
And you want to show something, you've got the term you used?
Well, so we spent a lot of time observing the way that people use pre-rendered content in meetings,
right,
to really deeply understand. And as I mentioned, we partnered with NBBJ, you know, world-renowned architecture firm, very digitally sophisticated, producing a lot of spherical content, and really observed, like, how are you employing this content? How are you sharing it? How are you using it in meetings? How are you sending it? Mm-hmm. And asking, really, they helped to guide our hand around what would be truly useful. And the acronym you're referring to is, you know, we observed when we saw a lot of the VR that was being done, we call it CBNU, cool but not useful. You
right.
know, so like it tickles a lot of neurons, you know, right. When you're experiencing it, you know, I use the analogy of like, it's like eating a big pancake breakfast and it's delicious, right? But when you're in really high price, high presence VR, but then there's no way you'd eat that way every morning. And you should still continue making pancakes because your customers love pancakes, but why don't we actually build the high protein Greek yogurt of VR? Like, what's something that's maybe a little bit less delicious, but actually you could use in every meeting, on every project, every single day? That's what really led our
hand. It's also healthier too.
Well, there's that.
But the image you showed was interesting. It was a picture, I believe, of an actual meeting that was going on at NBBJ where one person had a headset.
Yes.
And that person is no longer in the meeting.
Yeah.
Everyone else, the meeting's going on, and this person is in another world. And the whole point is that they should all be looking at the same thing at the same time. Right?
Exactly.
And so that's the thing that you're trying to solve.
That's exactly, I mean, you guys are obviously very much in this headspace, but that's exactly what led us to this path of really building the comm stack,
right?
You know, instead of really investing in the visualization pipeline or any individual plug into an individual tool, really thinking about how to humans communicate. So like the charrette would be, you know, what if everybody in this meeting could be in VR together, all 10 of us and all like, and the five people in the remote location could all be in VR together with the same pre-rendered content and marking up and, you know, and the response is like, well, that's not possible now. There's not enough VR rigs. Okay, but what if there were? Like, what would it take to do that? And not surprisingly, the challenges to overcome to achieve that, as is the case with any new medium, the hardest things about doing exceptional VR have nothing to do with VR, right? So like that's why my co-founder, Sean B. House, and his team, who are exceptional at building like cloud communication systems and, you know, web-based authoring platforms and like really thinking about like, how do you just make it so easy to create and host a meeting? Let's solve that problem.
Right.
Then once you do that, wouldn't it be rad if you could take all that same content, including annotation, teleportation, design variations, markup, and if you could bake it into this, you know, kind of cellular appropriate nugget that could be sent around. Now, in some cases, you might not even have to meet. Like, you could actually send a curated tour or a set of challenges and questions. And all, that whole domain of synchronous and asynchronous communication we geeked out on and said, let's actually really dive in and see how far we can push
that. But isn't that kind of the point a little bit about VR? Because if everyone's in there, you know, if everyone's in the same room and they have VR, they're all going to a place. It's just not the conference room. They're going to a virtual place.
Yes.
So why would they need to even be anywhere else? You know, they can still have the conversation. They can still, I mean, vocally they can talk, right?
Yes.
So you're all looking at the same thing. You don't need to be with that person. And that makes sense to me.
Well, I mean, the thing that I find interesting is that as soon as you talk about VR and you want to talk about solving a problem, they think that problem is in VR.
Right.
But right. That's not actually the problem. The problem was in communication.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And being able to solve the communication problem so that you can use it in VR is that's a big deal. And I think that's one of the challenges is everybody assumes that because it's VR, AR or something, that's where the problem lies. No, it's you need to be smart about how you and bring it together.
The thing would I if here's the problem I think a little bit about the people that are working in VR, I think they overthink a lot of problems. What you solved is like, so if I were going to give it to a typical VR person out there right now, especially in Southern California, where there's a lot of these guys working right now, they'd say, well, you got to make an avatar and you have to be avatar and you have to be here. And it's like, that is a huge complicated thing. You've done away with all of that. You've made it so simple. You're basically a name on the screen and a voice. And you know what you're looking at because you,
It actually might be, useful for the listening audience if you could describe like the experience of VV because it might be hard.
Sure, sure. So this is the demo you gave me and tell me if I'm wrong, whatever, but it's just really simple. I had an Android phone, you have an iPhone, and you basically said, okay, go to your app store of choice and download Visual Vocal, right? So download it, ready to go. And there's an interface, which is just like four buttons, like my VVs, login of some kind, and then or...
And join meeting.
Yeah. Join meeting, right? We all happen to be on the same Wi-Fi, which also starts, so I didn't even have to do anything, right? You loaded the project.
Oh, the Wi-Fi is a like you could be on, we could have all been on different cellular networks.
Okay, that, right. So you loaded the project you wanted to do and you hit... start meeting of some kind, right? And then our phones just went bling and we were in VR, right? Now, the other cool thing that you've done, which is a really nice touch, by the way, is you brought a box that had 10 basically Google Cardboards, but they're not cardboards anymore, right? Which are these little spectacle things that clip onto your phone. They work great, by the way. I've seen a lot of these things. Yeah. They work really great. So you just clip onto your phone and you have to see the glasses and... great VR experience right off the bat. And I could look through just like a normal cube map does. I've seen this experience. It works great. I've seen it on the obviously on the old
Gear VRs
and obviously and everything else. And it's just as good as any of those. And I'm looking through and besides looking at the building that I'm looking at, there's a couple of markers and
icons.
Yep.
Icons.
You call them hotspots.
Yeah. Hotspots. So there's a little square ones and then there's a little diamond shape one. And the diamond shape one is got an animation on it that makes it look like you're about to go on an escalator of some kind. So that to me, I knew it. You didn't have to tell me. I already knew that was going to teleport me somewhere, right?
Right.
The other one was a marker that's going to show you something, right? Oh. So you came on board and then I could see that you were, you know, you and I were talking and what you did, this is the brilliant part to me, honestly, and I know some people think of different things, but you just literally, because your phone is not inside a case, right? It's still exposed. You just take your finger and you put it on the screen, and as you're rotating your hand around, you're drawing in VR space, making a note. And as you're doing that, on my screen, I see your name that is drawing the thing. So I know, like, oh, this is what you're looking at. And if I happen to not be looking in the direction you're looking at, just like a fighter jet, as you mentioned, there's an arrow telling me to the right. And I say, go to the right. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what you're looking at. So you and I are completely talking about the same thing at the same time. You don't have to pass me the headset. We're both have our own headsets. We're both looking at the same thing. That was really cool. And then you go to the square, and then you can say, click on it, and it'll bring up several options. So at that point, you could say, oh, here's option A with this kind of window cladding, option B with this kind of window cladding, option C. And so we can have a discussion about all of those things. And then you take the teleporter, and we went inside the lobby of the building and the same sort of thing. So you can do a tour, et cetera. That was really cool.
Cool. Yeah, that was a beautiful breakdown of the exact experience. I mean, a couple of little details that for those who haven't experienced Fisher Vocal. So one thing is that the way that we link the phones actually has nothing to do with the physical network you happen to be on.
It's so all linked on the cloud, right?
It's linked on the cloud, but we also use this unique method called Chirp from a British company that actually issues a audible set of tones, and then all the phones within earshot hear that.
Oh, that's how it worked?
Yeah. And it cloud looks that tone up like a 2400 baud modem, basically.
That's what I was going to say.
But it's a pleasant sounding. I mean, Chirp did a really good job. And in fact, that tone, I know, right? It's totally killer. And it actually works over the phone line. So you can be on a Polycom. You can have like three people in London, three people in New York, you know, five people in LA,
oh,
whatever.
Shit, that's brilliant.
And then all of them, because the phone has better hearing than we do, it hears that tone, looks up in the cloud to find out what VVID, like what VV, which
that,
is what
I
we
didn't even
file.
Realize that what was going on. I thought it was because we were on the same network.
No, it has nothing to do with Wi-Fi. So you can, in fact, I can't tell you the number of demos I've done, like in a hotel lobby or at a restaurant or wherever, there's tons of ambient noise. As long as they can hear that tone,
right?
Everybody's, not only are they looking at the same VV, which is the same collection of renders, but they're actually, we're all in there together. So the drawing method that you described, one subtle point is that the whole screen's one big button. So you smash your finger on the screen and you move your head movement and you leave this trail. Right. And then you lift your finger and it's like this ethereal thing that fades out.
Yep. Right.
And then everybody who's in the meeting gets a color coded, their own pen color.
Right.
So that there's this nice, you know, there's always like 30 seconds of kindergarten as people learn how to draw and then they're all in there together. So it's...
I was very intuitive.
Good.
It was very intuitive. But that is amazing, that Chirp thing. Because here's the cool thing. I am, you know, some big CEO of some, you know, company, and I want to talk to you or whatever. I hate technology, but you just took that away from me. Like, just open the app and then it'll work.
Yes.
You don't even have to worry about getting a login or anything.
Yes. An enormous amount of kind of effort and engineering went into trying to just remove every one of these little like barriers. Another thing that you mentioned is that, you know, you mentioned avatars. So we obviously looked at all the avatar based systems, and look, there's many other companies in the space that are executing with grace. Mm-hmm. But one thing we observed is that it's actually quite useful with pre-rendered content that you know that everybody's like literally inhabiting the same noggin.
Right.
Like, you know, when I'm just pointing at something and I know that it's in their POV and that they can view it. And sometimes avatars are super useful for collaborative acts, but for the specific like talking over top of spherical captures or spherical renders, it's actually quite useful to just all be inhabiting the same noggin. Like that's quite useful.
Well, there's several things that I like. One is creating 3 degrees of freedom, which is what we have right now, right, is unbelievably easy. And Lon and I know that tons of our customers are creating 3 degrees of freedom right now. That's like bread and butter for them. It's easy. They know how to do it, et cetera. The other thing that's nice about it is that how much does that VR system cost? $4 for this thing, right? It's $4 and it uses a device that you already have on you, the phone. And you've been basically, anyone can do it at any point in time. I really think that there's something very, very useful. By the way, that's another thing that was interesting about it. Because I've seen in the early days of putting spherical or cube maps on cardboard is that they were really laggy.
Yeah.
They're not laggy on this one at all. They were really good. So I was pretty impressed, which is great.
Well, that's more credit to you. I mean, the rendering, these spherical renders and cube maps are just so good now.
Right.
And that you can actually, I mean, the whole VV that we looked at together was about the size of an MP3 album.
Right.
And that was like two different scenes, multiple hotspots, multiple variations, all baked into this tiny cellular appropriate package.
Right.
That, again, that has nothing to do with us. That's really a credit to how sophisticated the render methods have become.
Right. Well, that's great. I think it's really cool that you're able to do that. The other thing that you mentioned that you also do, and I'm going to keep, is that you can leave notes, annotations, right? So, so you can basically record a presentation or say, okay, I'm showing you these five options or whatever, and then just send it to someone, and then they can go into VR and hear you say, here's what I was thinking, right? You don't Yes. have to be there necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the experience was impressive, but the authoring experience was really awesome because you grab your content, you give it a name, you give it a label, you stack it up, you connect them with whatever hotspot.
Yeah.
You basically put that whole demo together, you know, the one that we just saw, you did it live for us in about 5 minutes, including recording options and annotations, right? So the ability to go, all right, here's all my stuff, I'm going to layer it together. I mean, it's faster than trying to even start a go-to meeting or put it in a PDF or right. You know, any of the other ways. It actually was way more intuitive.
And it was all on the web, too.
It was all done on the web.
Yeah, all web-based. So and this is another insight from our design process, was that we observed how much time professionals in any industry that live and breathe 3D data types, whether it's construction, architecture, engineering, molecular biology, aerospace, they all spend a tremendous amount of time staging content specifically for a meeting. And it's a huge productivity killer. So the yeah. idea is, what if you could just take the renders and very quickly using the human voice and using, you know, it turns out this method of point and talk is an incredibly high bandwidth method of communication.
Point and talk?
Just point while talking. Like, hey, we need to move this thing, point,
right.
to this place, right? It's like, or, you know, this conduit isn't quite going to work because there's a weld right here. You know, like,
and you just, do that with renderings all the time, right? So, if, you know, even if you're showing it on your screen, right, in a meeting, it's a 2D screen. You're pointing to that screen constantly.
Yep. Yep.
Yes. And so you make notes that way or whatever. You know, that's why, like, even when I was working in visual effects, everyone had laser pointers.
Yes.
So that they could all, like, talk and, like, point to, like, this is the problem area here. Ah, okay.
I think for, like, 100 million years, that's been, like, a fundamental method of human communication. Like,
right.
Those wolves are going to attack us. Like, you know, there's, like, a very useful method for communicating.
Yes. Right? Where? Which wolves? Over there.
You know, so it's, yeah. like, understanding.
And only your dog looks at your finger, not what you're pointing at.
Right, exactly.
But humans know to look where the finger is pointing, right?
It's powerful. So we said, let's figure out the most accessible way to recreate that. And then what you teased out just now is that, okay, you know, a lot of people, they use VV in a meeting for the first time, like they'll host a meeting using the method we just described. Mm-hmm. But then after they do two or three of those meetings with a stakeholder or subcontractor or whatever, they say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if I could actually do this, you know, change variations while speaking and pointing and have that all be synchronized in the metadata of the thing. Mm-hmm. And then that thing we call a VV, mm-hmm. what if I could send that to somebody asynchronously? Then they could open it at their leisure at 1 a.m. in their pajamas or at an airplane gate about to board, right. whatever. They could consume that, hear the markup, you know, or hear the voice, see the markup, right. see the variations synchronized with those annotations. And then they could actually communicate back upstream. Now, all of a sudden, you can start to use that as a core communication method between design pairs.
Yeah, it's like text messaging in VR.
Exactly.
Yep. Except, or with voice.
But, yes,
or,
the Slack yeah. of VR. Exactly.
Yeah, it's the Slack. There you go. The Slack of VR. But I also, okay, so just to make that even simpler, which I also liked, is that all of these are QR codes, kind of, but you basically use a seven-digit
Yes.
serial number of
We looked at QR codes, but right. we actually came up with a method that we prefer, which is, again, I'm a big fan of, you know, to the point you just made about sometimes technologists love to climb really hard mountains to climb, but actually there's good solutions that are easier. So right. I'm a big fan of low tech solutions to high tech problems. And right. this particular, we essentially built like a tiny URL for VR,
right.
which is a 7-digit globally unique alphanumeric sequence
right.
that can be written with a Sharpie on a job site.
Or right. you can say it over the phone.
That was a key. That was a requirement.
Yeah. You right? can't say a QR code over the phone.
Yes. Yes. And we like
Lon hates QR codes.
Yeah, I'm like
he is.
I'm rolling my. The worst experience that I ever had was I went to an office, and I won't say exactly who they are, but I'll say that they make GPUs. And I needed to get on the Wi-Fi, and you know, posted outside the room was a QR code to get onto the Wi-Fi, and I'm on my cell phone. I don't have a QR code reader. And I'm like, how do I get onto the Wi-Fi? And they're like, well, you just use your QR code. And I'm like, oh, I gotta go onto the App Store, download a QR code reader, and then get this. Can't somebody just tell me
just give
what
me
the, it is?
Yeah,
I just didn't bother. Never
mind. Yeah, and also just the ability to, you know, without having to gen up a QR code, and you could just like put it into a drawing and say, you know, details at VVID, blah, and then right. you can just bang that into the app and
it's a 7-digit number.
And they're ugly. Sorry. The QR codes are like, you know, the Space Invaders that didn't make it, right? They're like after they got blown up.
That's a good one.
You don't like QR codes. I think it's hilarious.
No. I mean, now I think the iPhone comes with default a QR code app.
I'm so, gonna. So yeah, there was a guy.
So I
there was
that. A, maybe they'll make a comeback.
That's a great pet peeve.
There was a Johnny Gibson. I think had it. Was it Johnny Gibson? Or maybe it was someone else. No, it was someone else. He had a T-shirt that was one of those you know, the dots of color, that like the color blindness test.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it said, "I love color." And he used to walk around, and one of the guys, he was like, I'm one of our modelers. He was like, could never be a lighter or a compositor. He's like, hey, what's your T-shirt say? And he's like, that's why you're a modeler, right? He couldn't see color. But so I'm going to do a T-shirt that has a QR code. It's going to have like some very important information for you.
It'd be a great gift for you.
Yeah. I don't even know what
but to do. But the 7-digit, okay, let's go back to, sorry, the distracting, I lose track sometimes. But the QR code is obviously not always a solution. I think this is much simpler. You can say it over the phone. You can write it down on a, you can write it down,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
It's easy. And there's a lot of different use cases to it. So the other thing that I thought was interesting is you've obviously been thinking about this a lot. You're not just thinking about the cool demo. You're thinking about the practical uses of this. You've spent a lot of time actually watching people trying to use this, right? One of the yes. advantages you had is you guys were in NBBJ. You got to witness them actually trying to make this work for them every day and trying to improve it from there on.
Yes.
So tell me about some of the scenarios that you witnessed in here. And it doesn't have to be the sexy ones, right? Because that's a lot of people are like, look at this beautiful, it's the pancake breakfast, right?
Yeah.
So tell me about some other like sort of yogurt, healthy yogurt scenarios that you notice that could be useful to everyone that you were able to solve in
sure.
this way.
Well, I'll tell you some of my favorites, like some of the things I did not anticipate. There's all kinds of expressions of the way they use our variation system in ways that I would not have conceived of myself because I'm not an architectural leader. So I think, you know, like one example is we originally conceived of this variation system. And just for further clarification, changing between variations essentially tracks your head movement as you alpha fade between two different layers of a render mm-hmm. from the same POV. So what that means is that you can look around and that just like beautifully like fades into some other design variation. Mm-hmm. That was conceived to like say, hey, we got to make a decision today about option A, B, or C. And in the meeting, we're voicing over cost trade-offs, et cetera. So mm-hmm. what I didn't expect is that they said like, ooh, this is a really great way to show like to do a building cross-section. Like here's the facade. Now let's peer into the building, do a render with a cross-section yep. sliced off. Like or mm-hmm. time of day, you know, yep. is another way. Or another, one of my favorite ones is like running a Grasshopper script and actually having like non-built data that shows walk patterns, you know, alpha faded in over top of the actual render. You know, like mm-hmm. there's all kinds of clever ways to use the variation method that's not just design variation. So that's one cool thing. Mm-hmm. Another cool one that I'll mention is that it's like when I'm walking down the halls of NBBJ, I'll hear like that signature chirp sound that we described, like mm-hmm. that links it. It's like a dog whistle for me. I'm like, you know, what's happening? You know, I look over. And the interesting thing is, like, every once in a while, it's obviously a formal meeting, you know, but more interesting is the number of times I see, like, peer architectural designers just standing in a triad, like three of them right there impromptu, mm-hmm. just like, hey, I actually made a VV. Let me just show this to you. And then they whip out their phones and they whip out their little Snap-on Homito viewers. And then now all of a sudden...
Yeah, because it'll fit in your pocket. You can. It's like a... Yeah, like, it's great.
No planning, no reserving the VR room, no reserving a conference room even. Just like, we're sitting here for a hallway huddle, and rather than trying to describe geometries, let's just get in there together and quickly, like, talk about it. They're in VR, you know, quote, VR for 60 seconds or whatever. Right. Just, you know, sort of quickly making that decision. They collapse the viewers, throw them in their pocketbook or their pocket, and go about their business. Yeah. Like, that was a moment where I was like, okay, that I didn't expect, but that's rad. You know, like, people just doing... imagine a world where VR is so accessible.
And you don't even have to do, like, get on the phone and say, hey, come to my desk, I want to show you something. You don't even have to do that.
Yeah, yep. Right.
Yeah.
And, so you don't have the pass the headset problem.
No, pass the headset.
And then another cool thing about... This is actually a tremendous... kind of testament to NBBJ culturally, is that, you know, I was having a conversation with Steve McConnell, who's their managing partner. And number one, I was saying, like, look, you know, we should structure this so that the world can actually use this, like, you know, which is extraordinarily rare, right? That an architectural firm forges something and then makes it available to their peers and competitors and customers and everything.
Right.
And so tremendous care was taken to structure that venture and intellectual property framework in such a way that is possible, which is, again, like, a huge credit to the partnership. But even cooler than that is that, you know, we were having a conversation about, like, hey, listen, this communication method, we've been pretty disciplined about not designing it for architecture, like, because it's super useful to construction and engineering and aerospace. So is it, you know, would you be okay if this venture ends up being, you know, many more things than just architecture?
Right.
Because I think that will be important to investors. And what Steve said surprised me, but again, is a huge testament to the culture there, where he said, no, wait, you don't understand. That's actually way cooler for us because, as you know, NBBJ, our customers are biotech research labs and big aerospace companies and, you know, like, you know, software companies. So it's actually way better for us to have participated in a fundamental new communication medium of interactive computer, immersive computing, than just like another architectural tool. And I thought that was a neat moment, and that sort of set the stage for our collaboration since then.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know how I actually found out about you first, right? So it's not through Bob, and I'll get through why I got in touch with Bob, but it's from Kim Bowen Larson. Do you remember him?
Yeah, totally.
Right. So he had visited you over in Seattle and was telling me, like, this is like the simple solution that everyone's looking for. This is it. And these guys are doing it. I said, really?
Oh, that's amazing. I didn't know. I mean, he's an early thought leader in VR.
Oh, yeah. So I've known him for years and years, and Lon knows him as well. He's a really, really cool guy. And so he was telling me about that. I was like, huh. I was like, I want to find out more about this. It's like, and I didn't know it was a separate joint sort of collaboration, not necessarily. I thought it was part of NBBJ, but I know you got, they help fund you guys and you guys spread out and all that stuff, which is great. But then he got me in touch. That's why I got in touch with Bob. Bob Shea was a classmate of mine at Rice. And he says, I just happened to have left NBBJ, but John's a really cool guy. Let me get you in touch with him. And ever since then, we've been talking for almost a year.
Yeah, that's right.
And so we've been talking on the internet for almost a year and going through a few things. But now finally we got to
I know. I'm sorry it's taken us so long to meet in the real world.
No, but it's cool because you guys have had time to sort of, you know, continue to develop it and really do it. I think the timing is really important. People need this. This is, and yeah. You know, Kim was right. This is it. This is the kind of thing that is like, just makes sense. Right.
Well, I love, you know, we were talking earlier that, I love how such a small world. So the, you know, we were talking a little bit about the Never Built New York exhibit, which is happening right now in the Queens Museum, until February, maybe.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah, right, until February. Yeah. And very cool project. Sam LaBelle and those guys had originally put together the Never Built Los Angeles show here, which was a huge hit.
Yes. We should explain what that is because I think it's kind of cool.
So the idea is that they've kind of cataloged these projects that were designed, you know, in theory for New York, mm-hmm. and major, you know, major designs that were never actualized, that were never built. but could have had this, you know, tremendous impact on the way the city was. And, you know, there's a huge model that was built. I forget when it was built. It was built like 50 years ago.
Yeah, or something. It was for the 1964 World's Fair.
Yeah, yeah. So
more than that's a long time ago.
I think Sam Temp said it took, I think he said it took something like 200 laborers 2 years.
Wow.
To handcraft this incredible architectural model. It's like a city block in size, but it's all of New York and Queens and Brooklyn. It's amazing.
So they have this physical model in this space in the Queens Museum that's kind of almost this trapped in time a little bit. And it's kind of a perfect introduction to, well, what if this was our canvas? What if the canvas was, we've got this and now we can see what would happen to it. So there's physical models that were added to this big display, as well as a virtual reality experience. Why don't you talk a little bit about the VR stuff?
Yeah,
you were actually on site to help get it off the ground.
Totally. It's been a super fun collaboration and kind of a beautiful expression of, you know, this type of immersive storytelling, right? So I originally met Sam LaBelle because he did a little segment about us for Wired and when he was writing for Wired, and we hit it off. And it turns out I was a Kickstarter backer of Never Build LA. So I love Never Build as a concept.
Right.
It's just so, I mean, we don't celebrate failure enough, I think, as creatives. Like, I think failure is very true. Powerful. And I think that, you know, these ambitious projects that were conceived but never built, like, why weren't they built? Oh, I'm glad it wasn't built. Or maybe it should have been built. Or, you know, like, it just creates a deeper conversation. Mm-hmm. So we started talking about that years ago. And so Craig Shimahara, Shimahara Illustrations.
I worked with at Gensler a long time ago, and he's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, he was on the podcast.
Also on the podcast.
Yeah, yep. You know, that team is brilliant. And so they were working with Never Built around doing both captures and renders, so captures of present-day New York, and then superimposing the renders of these, like, conceived buildings across time. And we wanted to sort of play with what would, like, a VR, even, like, kind of an AR expression be like, in that room, here you are looking at the scale model. Wouldn't it be rad if you could, like, put a little viewer on and actually, like, teleport down into the model and be standing in the real world, and then actually, like, hear a voiceover and have these unbuilt geometries, like, fade into view. Mm-hmm. And it, like, that's a VV. Like, that's a perfect example of a VV. So we built one, kind of Taylor built it and for that experience, and the show went live last month. It's incredible. And we actually now have a dedicated app in both app stores called Never Built NYC, so you can download it and kind of experience that content.
Yeah, and people should check that out because it's amazing. It's actually a great example. I mean, you can just do it right now, and it gives you an example of exactly the experience that you're talking about, right? And it just works.
Yeah, there's some crazy designs.
There's crazy designs.
And like I said, I have to get out to New York somehow to see it. And you saw the book that was sitting.
Offices.
Sam sent the book, and it was sitting right on the shelf, and I had this kind of surreal experience. I opened up the book, you know, like sometimes you just open up kind of halfway through and you start thumbing through projects. I opened it up and I thumbed through a couple of pages and I saw this page that said the Penn Farley, you know, this redo of Penn Station. And I turned the page and it's two renders that I did, like, you know, less maybe 10 years ago.
Amazing.
And I was like, oh, well, that's like Ghost of Christmas Past.
Wow.
That was very strange.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
That's awesome, though. You put a lot of love into that project, and now it can be expressed, you know. Yep. So that's
And I think that actually now I think there's some version, variation of that project that's happening.
I think is interesting is that there are several use cases for VR that I think make sense to me, right? I've been sort of an outspoken person against the trying to just shove a movie in VR situation, right? I don't always think that's successful. It, like, works. Having interactive experiences has always been a challenge until you just presented a solution that makes a lot of sense, which is great. Right. But the other thing that's cool about it is traveling to places and seeing things, right? Seeing things, places you've never been, or seeing things that never happened. In some way, I think it's a brilliant museum piece, you know?
Yes.
And that's, I think, a really cool thing that's awesome, you know, is being able to do that. Even your little chirp thing that you described, I could see that at a museum where you can walk around and bloop, push a button, and it'll chirp to your phone, and you can look around to. There's so many things that I can imagine that you could do with this.
That tech is super cool. I think, you know, to build on top of what you're both saying, I think, well, first of all, I'm super energized about the future of AR. Like, I think that, I use the soundbite that as hard as it is for me to describe to my kids that once upon a time you had to like make phone calls using this device that was plugged into the wall with a cable. Like, that's a wacky concept for them to grok at 5 and 10 years old. But actually, it will be way harder for them to explain to their kids that once upon a time, all of our digital information was presented to us through these rectangular slabs of glass and silicon. Like, we're at this precipice of this stage where the information is quite literally spilling out into the world around us. And, you know, not the day after tomorrow, but like, let's say, you know, a decade, 2 decades from now, we will all have some type of AR HMD and we'll walk around and be able to kind of see ghosts of whether it's things that are imagined or things that from the past or things that are conceived, or, you know, it's just going to be such a fundamentally new medium. Right. And that's really the company we get excited about. It's like, what is the, you know, never built, you know, is a beautiful example of like, imagine walking through a great city and just seeing these never built projects kind of in some layer in your real world, you know, and even in our world, like we use this term, of a location-specific discussion, or an LSD. And in fact, the name of our new YouTube channel about this topic is called Productive Hallucinations. So it's like, you know, how can you, you know, walk into a space and all of a sudden you're immersed in all the conversations about that space. What if it's for construction applications, or you want to talk about, you know, the past in the context of that space.
This is another great example you gave me, which I thought was brilliant. And this is very, very practical. It's not super sexy, but it's unbelievably practical and saves you the machine room example you were using.
Yes.
Tell, this is a great one. Go ahead.
Again, another example of something I would have not conceived with this as a communications format. But it turns out, like, many people who are using VV are not using it with renders as much as captures, and maybe captures with renders. So a specific example, we're talking to a lot of large construction companies that also do a lot of facilities management. So the idea is that, how do they communicate when they hand off the building, the building's done, how do they communicate to the tenant of that building how to maintain, and these are multi-billion dollar hospitals or whatever with complex machine rooms, like how do they communicate that? Well, you know, it's a series of web assets and a binder and some, you know, flat renders and photos. And but actually, the most rad thing to hand off to them is, what if somewhere in that room you have, you know, a VVID, a plaque with a VVID that says, hey, details about this room at this location. Anybody with a cell phone punches that in, with or without VR. And all of a sudden, the cool thing is that the way you stage the content is you just take a spherical camera, like a Ricoh Theta or a Samsung Gear 360, and you shoot a spherical photo of that room first before the drywall goes up. Then after the drywall goes up, and then with the drywall and with all the machines that are in the machine room, right? And then now you have this beautiful canvas. Those are essentially staged as three different variations. Mm-hmm. Just shoot it roughly in the same spot and the same height with a theta. Then you can actually alpha fade in and out those layers just like improvisationally as part of your narrative and description, so that you can actually be this voice from the beyond that says, okay, hey guys, on this boiler, there's actually a valve that needs to be maintained, but let me just make the walls go away for a second. Hang on. Switch to another variation. Everything, the walls fade out because you're looking at a historical, you know, capture that doesn't have the walls. Uh-huh. And then you say, now see this pipe right here? This is the pipe you want to worry about. This valve needs to be maintained every, you know, 6 years and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like, imagine having this like live narrative. And of course, with IoT, that will all be instrumented and live. I mean, that is like such a rad scenario of immersive communication, both VR and AR. I geek out about that. Like, I get so excited about people that are using this method in the least sexy possible way, but super practical, super pragmatic.
Right. No, I think that's brilliant. And it's like, show me how to maintain my space or whatever. I mean, you can even see it for your car, you know? here's where your oil is. Here's where this is. I mean, I could, like, the whole thing could be that way.
Yep.
That's anyway. That's the future.
Or you can make it much more complicated and create your own mist game so that everything that you look at you have to solve a puzzle in order to to unlock that bit of information.
So it's funny you say that, but in fact,
you could do this. You could. It could be like a really beautiful Pokemon Go.
The original code name for our web-based authoring tool was MYOM, Make Your Own Mist.
Because really,
think about it. It's like essentially teleporters.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and in fact, the sequel to Mist was Riven. The sequel to Riven was a game called Exile. And the difference between Exile and Riven and Mist architecturally was that Exile was all spheres. It was all monoscopic pre-rendered photospheres that you navigate around with a mouse. Mm-hmm. So in fact, like the thing they laboriously built for Exile is essentially what you can build in 5 minutes with your own project.
And I think it might have been rendered in V-Ray.
Exile?
I think so.
Oh, no
way. One of the Mist games for sure.
Sweet.
But I think one of them, I don't remember. One of them was Maxwell, one of them was Mental Ray, one of them was V-Ray.
Two things though. Productive hallucinations is now my new favorite term.
Yeah.
I think that is amazing. And it's also refreshing to hear somebody else use grok in a sentence.
Definitely needs to be part of the lexicon.
So, you know, a little Stranger in Strangeland references.
Welcome. Yeah. Okay. So here's, you know, obviously there's, what about the AR? What's next?
Yeah. Cause I agree with you. I think AR is, AR and mixed reality, assuming Magic Leap comes out with something.
There's many people who are exploring in this.
But I'm just.
But here, can I ask a question? And I'm gonna ask you, John, more specifically, because probably people are distinguishing mixed reality and augmented reality. Technically, it's all augmented reality. They're using the term mixed. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit of alphabet soup right now. You know, AR, MR, XR. I'll say this. I think that the core technologies that Microsoft and Apple and Google and others are developing to use even like phones to be able to do, you know, time of flight, you know, kind of put a TOF sensor on the bezel and be able to like sense the world at frame rate and place virtual objects into the video feed. That is cool. And that core tech will be fundamental as we move into kind of AR HMDs. But I actually think that there is an order of magnitude difference between having this, like, hold this lens to the world and then actually just having it be your glasses.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know,
is that what you're distinguishing between? Is that what people are going to start using as that's AR is when you have your phone and then MR is when you actually looking through glasses?
Yeah, I think we need an authority it bugs me because different people use different phrases for those things. But I think that probably the purest academic expression, you know, I mentioned that I funded Stephen Finer and others in early days of AR, and generally speaking, the way I spliced this is that, you know, virtual reality is when you're in your own world. Augmented reality is when you're blending together these kind of pinned 3D objects into some expression of the real world, Pokemon Go, everything else. Mixed reality is when these things are blended in such a way that, certainly not today, but if you fast forward, you know, 20 years, let's say, two whole iPhone generations, I can say with confidence that you won't necessarily be able to ascertain what are the objects that are in the real world and what are virtually presented in the real world, you know. And that is, I think, that's where we're headed. I mean, we are wired as humans to be able to interact in 3D, and at such a time when that content is in the world, it's incredibly powerful.
And that's exactly why I keep saying ray traced AR, MR, ray traced.
Well,
so that it's indistinguishable from the rest of what you're seeing.
Yeah. You need, if we see through ray tracing, right? So if what you're saying is like, you need it to light it exactly the way you need.
Want it to look exactly the way it should, and I want it to do it in smart ways that, you know, see what the world is around it, but I want that to be ray traced, not rasterized.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. I've been saying this for a long time. Of course, I do work for a company that makes a ray tracer, but ray tracing is the real-time ray tracing is going to happen. It's going to happen, and it's happening sooner than people think it is. And that will be the preferred rendering method of the AR experience. Absolutely, you're right. I think they're going to come.
But do I have to wait 20 years?
No.
I will.
Well, so here's another.
As long as it happens, I'm happy.
Another observation is that, 15 years ago, when I was at Microsoft, I would talk about how, super phones, I'd hold up an early version of a smartphone and say, this is eventually going to replace your laptop as your primary computer. And 15 years ago, that was a controversial notion. Obviously, not remotely controversial in 2017. Mm-hmm. Well, now I will often say that 15 years from now, many people that won't own a cell phone. They'll just have their glasses on. And if they want a phone type computing model, they'll just extend their palm and they'll have this, kind of slab of glass they can interact with, or they can just pinch and make it a tablet, or they can throw it on the wall and make it a screen that's shared. Now, that little scenario I just described is so tied up in the intellectual baggage that we have around this silly 2D computing paradigm, right? The reality is that's like the equivalent of how the first movies were filming people on stage. When you can get 3D for free, you will do all kinds of bonkers things.
Yeah, because you don't need physical devices. You don't need the physical stuff.
And there's no reason not to have everything be 3D, right?
There is going to be such a strange social aspect to this.
Oh my gosh. I mean, yes.
Just the fact that people are just constantly staring but not looking at you. They're looking at whatever is in front of them that you don't see.
Yep.
This phenomenon is not universally positive, by the way. But
no, it's not.
But there are certainly positive dimensions, pun intended, on how people will
so many weird things. I was talking to Sally Slade, who's over at Magnopus, and she was one of the very early HoloLenses, and she's just started going crazy over AR. She loves it. And she says, oh, there's so many cool things about it. I'm really into cosplay, and sometimes I want to go to work as a unicorn, but it's not socially acceptable to do that. But I can, at least if someone else is into cosplay with me at work, I can give them permission to see me as a unicorn if they want to. That's a weird thought, but that's cool.
What's even weirder though is if I select an avatar of my choice for you. And so I'm looking at you guys and Chris is a unicorn, right?
You wake up today's a unicorn day. Everyone's
feeling,
unicorn.
I'm feeling unicorn today. I'm feeling unicorn. But there is going to be a lot of strange things about that world, right? But then but there's also going to be a lot of really useful things, right?
Yes.
Such as the same scenario where I can just look behind the wall all the time and see where that wiring is, right?
Yes. Like true literal x-ray vision. The ability to be able to do that if your job is to maintain a building, that will increase your productivity enormously, right?
Well, and there's companies obviously who realize that, right? This is the other thing that's become very interesting, and this is specifically what you're doing. Everyone had this imagination of a world where VR was just popular with everyone. Everyone's doing games in VR, everything else. Turns out enterprise was a much more important market that they kind of ignored in a lot of ways until very recently. But even that's the same thing in AR, right? Like Daiquiri has done some incredible work with their helmets that is allowing that kind of experience.
Generally, I think that productivity, applications for productivity, it's such a deep well in so many domains. We spent most of our time talking about construction and architecture because that's our headspace, but just think about, molecular biology and, even clinical communications.
Anything medical.
Yeah. MRI data is all 3D, yet mostly viewed with some kind of 2D interface to the 3D object. Wouldn't it be great if you could just communicate in that way? That could be super powerful. As exciting as the last 10 years have been, I actually think the next 10 years will be more exciting in terms of transformation of how we think about creative uses for these new domains of technology. And again, there will be complex social considerations to all these things, as there always are when we're on the precipice of a next major cycle of communication technology. But I, for one, am giddy with anticipation to kind of have those conversations and build those technologies. This is a super, super thrilling time.
I agree. And I think just thinking about what people can do with it practically, right? Even you know, when Google Maps came around and they all did the street view thing, right? Everyone's like, oh, that's so weird, whatever. I was like, you know what? It's unbelievably useful. You know where you are, you know, and you know what it's supposed to look like. Oh, that's what the building. Okay. You're not, it's easy. So that type of technology is really useful. And then you combine that with VR. It's like, yeah, now I'm all set.
I just had a ridiculous thought. Okay.
All right. You always
have those are the best kind.
Yeah. So, yeah. So let's say in that 10 years, right, we have fully functioning, extremely well done mixed reality experiences.
Okay.
So
everyone has fancy.
Glasses
on.
You've got the fancy glasses and you can see whatever you want in like crystal clear reality. It doesn't matter what, like the physical objects, you no longer need to own. You need to own a comfortable place to sit and your house could be empty.
Yes.
Like you don't need, I don't need a TV. I don't need shelves. I don't need any of this stuff. Like
I don't need books.
The most important thing that I like the most fundamentally important thing that I need is I need really good rendering. Like I need that tech to work for me.
But you know what? And here's the other thing. He was like, well, then what do I sell? Well, here's the thing.
It's virtual.
Well, that's right. I was just having sort of a conversation about with a friend of mine about how much money his kids spend on content in video games.
Virtual goods.
Yeah. Virtual goods.
So you can start creating as a designer. You can design something. You no longer have to fabricate it. You no longer have to like.
Well, isn't this the other discussion? Totally. And I'm stealing this.
And you don't need to own anything.
I'm stealing this from Scott Metzger, but he said VR is a new real estate space that people could use, right? You could, just like Unbuilt New York, right? Okay, so it didn't get built, but it exists in VR.
Yes.
Right?
Well, it's more than that. It's just, it's like this whole alternate universe that you could have whatever you want.
Or like even, I worked at Disney for a while and like the theme park experience is fundamentally about like going to a place and having this kind of interesting diorama like experience, you know, like right. and imagine if you could just like go into any random stairwell and it's like, hey, go into that stairwell. There's actually a really good Disney ride in that stairwell. Yeah, you know, and like you go exactly. in there and all of a sudden it's like there's this fascinating little narrative based diorama in this random stairwell in some random building. You know, like that stuff will start to happen. And then of course that stairwell might actually be the foundation for 10 different rides depending on your mood. You know, like there's and I do agree with I there's, you know, again, this is one of those social dimensions, but like I do think architecture will on the long term start to change to recognize that people will want to maybe skin their environments and personalize their environments or based on, you know, they might want to change the typeface based on their vision ability. I mean, there's a bunch of considerations.
Gensler was there. Talking about, we were talking about with Eric Stilt. He was saying they had some building which is like pretty much the entire building is clad in some kind of a screen. So it's the building is changing itself through all the time, right? So that's cool.
And you're also going to have these like new requisites for spaces, right? You're going to need to be, it's going to need to be like a safe, like our little VR room here, right? Like you bump into furniture and you run into right. all that stuff. You basically just need warehouses. Like,
although there is
like so this is added warehouses.
One of the things I think about is like this does concern me a little bit in terms of access, right? So, you know, right. In terms of access to technology, that's a consideration. Now imagine when your actual lens on reality is different based on, socioeconomic consideration. I mean, it's a deep well of considerations, and we as inventors of the technology need to be very thoughtful of those considerations.
I hadn't even thought about that. Like, oh, like I can't afford the highest level, so
come
I don't.
On,
get
you
to
read
see
Ready
the,
Player One. I remember he had the really shitty display because he was a poor kid from the ghetto.
Until it became a sponsor. Another thing is I like to think about what are the things that will become, what are the physical objects that we've come to know that will become obsolete when your eyeglasses, which look exactly like the eyeglasses I'm wearing, they actually are doing world sensing and full opacity rendering, full transparency rendering at all times. And it's like maybe we will never ever need flashlights. Like maybe your system will just know what light level you think is too dark and it will just sort of adjust the world for you and no one will be dazzled by your flashlight at night and you'll be able to go wherever you want. Or, you know, like there's all these little things that like this world will change. And it's incredible.
You may not need a keyboard anymore.
Well, anything with a screen.
Anything with a screen will go away because you constantly have a screen, right?
Yeah.
So no more TVs, no more laptops.
When you watch a movie and somebody walks past a flat panel, that will be such an anachronism. You'd be like, oh my gosh, remember when they thought the future we'd have screens everywhere? Like, you know, that's like, there are no screens actually.
Right,
you know?
There's no more screens.
Or maybe they're all screens, depending on your perspective.
But like, okay, you go on an airplane on that crappy little seat, right? And I'm tall, so I'm always going to be uncomfortable. But but you don't have that little screen anymore. You'll have a beautiful IMAX screen in front of you at all times to watch a movie.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Have you seen the devices that they try to sell now? They've tried to sell them for years where it's like, it's not even a VR goggle. It's just like this little screen inside of a headset that's supposed to look like a 6-foot wide screen when you put the headset on.
Well, the remote viewing, the viewing 2D content in VR is pretty interesting. So one of my favorite like examples is my son's an avid Minecraft player, right? And I've just started playing Minecraft in VR using the new Oculus 6 DOF version.
Right.
And so it's cool because the way it starts is you're sitting in a Minecraft living room with a Minecraft couch with a huge TV like made of Minecraft bricks. But inside the TV is, of course, you're like Minecraft world and you're navigating around. So it's like you're sitting in your living room, but then you push a toggle button and all of a sudden
you're
like
in the world.
You're in
the world, you know, and you can go back and forth depending on your comfort level. But it's just like that. It's such a mind shift to think about, like, well, first of all, it's kind of rad that I'm in this, like, I'm playing Minecraft in a room made of Minecraft on a Minecraft couch is like trippy in its own right. But then actually like being able to smash a button and now all of a sudden you are in the world and they've tuned it in such a way that you don't get nauseous when you're navigating, which is hard. And so that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, it's so exciting.
Well, that's the other thing about AR and, or, you know, MR stuff is that your nausea level goes away because you always have a reference back to the real physical world, right?
So yes.
You can get away with a lot.
I mean, assuming the tracking is there.
Even if the tracking wasn't as bad, you don't get... I mean, if even tracking was not as good and it kind of slips a little bit, you're not going to get nauseous from that because you always have a reference to the real world.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, it's a really insightful comment. This is actually one of the reasons why we chose these Homedo Minis, these open air viewers, because it dramatically decreases the impact of simulator sickness.
Interesting.
For those who are susceptible to it, because you even just a little bit of peripheral exposure to the real world and you can pull it away very quickly. You know, it kind of alleviates a lot of the comfort issues that we have experienced with VR, which is some people still can't render a stereoscopic, scene. But for the most part, it solves it for the vast majority of people that are uncomfortable in like high presence VR.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
I can put that in my next guide to VR thing. All right. Well, we're just about an hour, which is awesome. So let's review. Is this product available for anyone?
Just now, yes. So it's available, you know, sort of standard SaaS model, and flybyvisualvocal.com, and we can set you up.
Okay, and so people can do a trial version of it. What's actually the cost structure? Because I know people are going to ask this. So how does that work?
Constantly rethinking our cost structure, but it's generally like per user per month.
So it's a subscription.
Yeah, it's a subscription model. But it's very clean. It's actually we think made it super affordable because it's 100% self-service. So there's no like services component for us or anything. You just like you go to portal.visualvocal.com and you log in with your ID and then you can be dragging and dropping your photospheres and making VVs all day long. And then any VVs you make magically just show up when you log into the app. In your like VR inbox, essentially.
Yeah, and we've got some ones already in mind from some content, some 3DOF content that we've got with the library. And
yeah,
we've
got Beth Hans library.
So
and
maybe we'll set up some sample VVs and put those up on the website if people
want to check them out.
If they want to check them out.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Okay.
Be great.
Very cool. All right, guys. This has been awesome. Thanks a lot. I'm so glad we got to meet finally.
Yeah, likewise.
We had lunch over at Finn's Arcade, which is awesome.
<That's> totally did incredible. You notice that there's space for lease up above it?
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah, so Chris and I were like, well, let's maybe just pretend like we're going to look for office space. And then Jug would be like, oh, this place would be perfect for an arcade.
somehow this space feels like it should be an arcade. I don't know why, but... that's awesome. Well, thanks for your hospitality. It's a pleasure to be
absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. I'm really glad to be able to see that. And I want to make sure that people are able to see your stuff. So if you guys are listening, we should have all the links on the podcast page and you should be able to check it out.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to what's next.
Yeah.
Good. Awesome. Likewise.
All right. Thanks, John.
Thank you.